You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
No one seems to be able to agree on a definition of jazz, but improvisation is clearly one of its key elements. Today on Please Explain, we're going to talk about how jazz musicians improvise and how the principles of improvisation can help us better understand what we're listening to. And I'm thrilled that the man doing the explaining today is Bill Charlap, who is considered one of the best jazz pianists in the world. It is my great pleasure to welcome him back to our show. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me on the show.
To anyone who's not a musician, improvisation can be very mysterious, even magical. Is it fair to say that the musician is composing on the spot?
I wouldn't, though that can be the type of thing that has a gray area. But in the type of playing that I do mostly, it's more about a variation form. There is already an agreed-upon structure, and the improviser improvises the arrangement and, indeed, new melodies, new rhythms. But the structure is very definite. Now, this is only one area, of course, of improvisation, but I think a very large area for the jazz improviser.
Well, Baroque musicians sometimes improvise, and Indian musicians like Ravi Shankar certainly do.
Sure.
But is there improvisation similar to what jazz musicians do?
I couldn't say, because I'm not a master of what they do. In fact, a couple of nights ago, went to Carnegie Hall and heard Zakir Hussain, who was unbelievable. But I can't say I understood what he was doing. I enjoyed it. I can't say I knew the structures and forms, but they were very definite. It was very clear that the musicians were communicating with each other in such a way that they knew exactly what the basic structure was, but they had incredible freedom within that. So I think that's one of the key things about jazz improvisation, at least the playing that I do mostly, is that there is a very strict discipline to the basic structure, but within that, it can absorb all types of complexity and all types of ways of getting from point A to point B.
Well, what is that structure? Is that what, when musicians talk about improvising on the chord changes, is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about, and I'll make...
And you can demonstrate at any time.
Sure, okay. I'll make a simple analogy. Let's say you're walking from, 10th Street to 11th Street. Now, you can walk in a straight line, straight up from 10th to 11th. You can walk around the block, walk around the avenue. You could cross the street to the other side and cross back over. You have these basic structural points, however. You have 10th and 11th, and your goal is to get to 11th Street. You can get there so many different types of ways. You might stop in a store. You might do anything on the way. That's something about what an improviser is doing as they're getting from point A to point B, the linchpins of a piece. And I will demonstrate it to you so it's a little bit clearer. Let's take a very simple song. Well, it's not that simple, but it's not...
No songs are simple.
No, I don't think any of the great popular songs that we play on are that simple. But here is one that at least the opening strains have a very basic function in terms of the harmony. I'm talking about the song called These Foolish Things, which simply starts in the key. We're going to be playing it in E flat, and in an exact time structure. Now, I brought along a metronome to show how that works. I'm going to find four beats in a tempo that we can talk about this. It's a little too fast, so we're going to go a little slower. Okay. Now, in the beginning of the song, it's based on this harmony, and it's this harmony happening two beats per measure. So four of those beats will be one measure. Here's a measure. One, two, three, four. And here are two beats per measure. the harmony of the first two bars, and that's all we're going to deal with now. In fact, I'm going to go a little slower. Very, very simple, very basic key center there. You have a one chord, a six chord. We call it a six chord because we go up to the sixth degree of the scale and build the chord that's based there. Then a two chord, the second degree, and then a five chord. And that's your basic structure of the harmony. Now, that harmony goes by in an exact time period, two beats per measure, as I've said. But during that time, I'm just going to play now the bass line, the bass notes, only the notes that are the most important notes of that chord, and the melody. Here's the bass note. Now, here's the melody. Now, of course, that's extremely basic rhythmically. It's a nursery rhyme. I can change that and start to improvise on just that material that you've heard rhythmically. Change it a little bit. I'm still going to use the metronome to show where the beat is. That's something like what a singer might do. A very good singer would phrase the lyrics with that melody. Now, that basic harmony that I played with this voicing, this disposition of the important notes, that basic harmony can be arranged or fleshed out with more notes, less notes, but it's still the basic harmony. I'll play that harmony in various different ways. Here it is as I played it first. And now I'll add one more note. And now I'll add some more. And now I'll alter the chords a little bit so they're a bit richer. Okay? Now we're back to our basic structure.
Now all of those things that you just added, that's not in the original composition.
That's true.
These are the voicings that different jazz musicians choose as a way of personalizing.
Well, there's the voicings that I chose at this moment, and certainly there are many precedents for those type of sounds. Another thing, as we're just talking about how the harmony has to get from point A to point B, in a strict amount of time, another thing that happens is that I could shift the amount of time that I might give to each of those beats, but still get from point A to point B in time.
So wait, so improvisation is also a rhythmic thing as
yes.
well?
You're,
in this case, you're playing something in 4-4 time. That's why
right.
there's four beats. But
That's
it could
right.
be 5-4 time?
Or... Oh, no, I'm not talking about changing the time signature.
No, I understand. But within this 4-4, you can play it very straight, or you can do all sorts of little shifting things.
That's right. All I've been doing is playing it straight so far. Now, here's still the four beats. I'm still going to get from point A to point B, but I might not do it right on the beat. Here it is. 2, 3, 4. 1, and... I went on to a new chord. I also added some passing chords, some things that are like, as I was saying, you might visit a store or you might go across the street. Well, I did that there.
Now, this is the way contemporary jazz is played. If we were to look at the history of jazz, which is all improvised, going back to Dixieland and then swing and then bebop and then hard bop and then post-bop and avant-garde jazz and all the rest, we would be going from 10th Street to 11th Street in the same way, but it would be a lot different each time.
Well, improvisation is such a big topic. It would be like saying, let's discuss classical music. Well, you'd be talking about Bach, Schoenberg, and everything in between, and everything after, and everything before. There's no way I could be comprehensive in talking about it.
But the only reason I mentioned that, by the way, I'm talking with Bill Charlap, we're talking about improvisation on today's Please Explain, is because things like passing chords probably never occurred to Louis Armstrong, as great an improviser as he was.
Oh, no, they certainly did occur to him. He may not have necessarily been all the time thinking about the technicalities of them, but he was absolutely playing them.
So all of these things, this vocabulary has always been there.
Universal. It's beyond style.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond style. Now, you did mention avant-garde and free improvisation, and that's quite different. That's making something up from nothing, and that is entirely, hopefully at its best, entirely improvised, made up on the spot, not with a basic structure. But I'm trying to shed some light on what I think is the bulk of what a jazz improviser has to deal with in most of the music that we hear.
And whether you're playing solo, and piano is one of the unique instrument in that it can be both a solo instrument and an accompanying instrument. And when you're playing solo, you are also accompanying yourself, which a trumpet player can't do, a saxophone player can't do.
That's true. A trumpet player or a saxophone player needs to hear the basic structure in their inner ear, almost hearing the bass line in your head and the qualities of the chords, the types of chords, not whether you like them or not, the qualities. Are they major, minor, augmented, or diminished in your inner ear as you're improvising a chorus? Now, there is other elements of improvisation, of course, besides shifting the rhythm and just playing the harmony. I'm improvising, of course, the sound that I'm making, the touch, how loud, how soft, how long the duration of the chord, all of that too. And we haven't yet touched on making up a new melody on this progression.
Because a lot of jazz compositions are actually based on other songs. Something like I Got Rhythm has been the father of hundreds and hundreds of different compositions.
That's true, and certainly the blues is first and foremost in terms of a form that is both the sound of jazz, the sound of American music, and the basic structure for so many others.
So why don't you just play a simple blues and then show us how that could become something else? Because I think pretty much everybody understands how the blues work. Rock musicians improvise on the blues.
Okay. I had actually chosen Foolish Things because of the I Got Rhythm quality, because mm-hmm. it is a basic 1-6-2-5 as is I Got Rhythm. But let's go to a simple blues. Let's look at just a basic blues form, basic 12-bar blues, where you have the piece is built of essentially three chords, those three chords being the one chord. Let's say we're in the key of G major. That's... Okay, that's our parent key. We're in G major now, and we're going to go from the one chord to the four chord, to the one chord, to the four chord, to the one chord, to the five chord, to the four chord, to the one chord, but like this. Another bar of that one chord. Here's a bar of the four chord. And another bar of the four chord. And two more bars of the one chord. Here come two bars of the five chord. I'm trying to stay on mic. Two bars of the four chord.
And you're doing it all with one hand.
Yes. Okay, now, we might make something up. Thank you. blues can also be this.
My guest on today's Please Explain is Bill Charlap, who, among other things, is the artistic director of Jazz in July at the 92nd Street Y's Tisch Center for the Arts. His most recent albums for Blue Note Records are Bill Charlap Plays George Gershwin, The American Soul, and also a CD of ballads in duo with his mother, Sandy Stewart, and you were here to talk about that about a year or so ago.
Yes.
And we will take a little break when we come back. More of this and your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. We're back with Bill Charlap, and we are trying to explain on Please Explain how jazz improvisation works. I think we're doing a pretty good job, Bill. But maybe we should just, for a moment, talk about some of the terms that musicians use.
Sure.
Like, what's a head and a head arrangement?
A head is the melody, but most often refers to a perhaps slightly more complicated melody, a new melody, sometimes written on a pre-existing piece. For instance, a song like Whispering, an old standard, which the melody goes like this. Dizzy Gillespie wrote a piece based on those changes and that melody, not on the melody, but on the changes, which goes like this. That's Groovin' High, based on Whispering. And that's the head, Groovin' High. So let's play the head. If we say that in a group, we're going to play. First we play the head, then there's a tenor solo, then there's an alto solo. That means choruses, exactly the structure of the chorus of whatever piece that is, whether it's a 32-bar song, a 12-bar blues, a 64-bar song. That's a given. And if someone says, perhaps, it's I Got Rhythm with a Honeysuckle Rose Bridge. Well, that just means that it's that basic structure of those pieces. The I Got Rhythm structure, which is 1-6-2-5-3-6-2-5, and a Honeysuckle Rose Bridge, which, well, we won't get into the technicalities of it.
But when we're talking about improvising in this case, okay, so you everybody knows the head, you work out the arrangement, and then people are going to solo on that chord structure.
Yes.
But you have a number of different people. You have a pianist, a bass player, a drummer, the so-called rhythm section, and a soloist. Maybe a guitar is in there as well. And they all have to be able to play together. They're improvising all at the same time, and you don't want it to sound like a mess.
No, everybody has a function. The bass player, if he's playing in two, which means two beats per the measure, or in four beats for the measure, is improvising a counterpoint, but a counterpoint which has to delineate the structural design of the piece. The pianist, as he's comping, we call comping, is shorthand for accompanying, needs to be like another drummer. He's interjecting both the harmony of the piece and rhythmic swing and drive.
And some musicians have told me that part of the thrill when everything is going well is that a real conversation develops and people surprise each other. It's as they were actually talking to each other musically.
Whitney Balliot said a great thing about jazz once, and it was that jazz is the sound of surprise. So I think that that's indeed true. We're surprising each other all the time. And listening, having a conversation, listening is as important as playing.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. My guest is Bill Charlap. And we're speaking now to Dennis from Upper Manhattan. Hi, Dennis, you're on the air.
Yes. How can one distinguish, an average listener distinguish between good improvisation and average or poor improvisation?
It's finally a matter of taste. An average listener will say, I like it or I don't like it. I can't say that whether it's poor, whether it's accurate or not, but your ear will generally tell you whether something is good or not.
Well, do musicians make those judgments when you're playing with somebody you haven't played with before? Do you think, this guy isn't doing all that good?
Well, it's very easy to hear at what level another player is, depending on what level you are. And you're listening for so many different things, not just whether or not someone is necessarily inside or outside of the harmony. And there's no steadfast rule that says you have to be either of those things. But it's what they have to say. It's all the different layers and levels that an improviser is speaking on musically. And we hear that in ourselves, too. We're not sitting around judging each other. We're holding ourselves to very stringent disciplines, too.
Some years ago, I spoke to a very great jazz trumpet player, Kenny Durham. He's no longer with us. And he said that when he wanted to find out whether somebody was good or not, he never played something fast because people can easily fool you when they play fast. He would play a very, very slow blues and listen to whether they had any real ideas.
Well, that's a very, very good point, that when playing something that's that exposed and that basic of a form, and not just the form, but the feeling of the blues, will tell you what kind of story someone has to tell.
Thank you so much for calling us, Dennis. Hakeem from Elizabeth, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air. Hakeem, are you there? Well, Hakeem,
My question is, who would you guess say was the greatest improviser that they ever listened to?
I think there's too many to say the greatest, but some of the greatest were Louis Armstrong, Charlie Parker, Art Tatum, Bud Powell, Max Roach. There's so many.
Branford Marsalis says that he thinks Sonny Rollins may be the greatest ever because he says it just pours out of him and he always comes up with something different.
He's certainly one of whom there is none greater.
Well, it sounds like good people to me. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Well, thank you. In the end, with people like the ones you mentioned, did they further the language of jazz? Because each one of them seems to have been part of a revolution.
I think that jazz is about being yourself, and certainly those people I mentioned were such profound individuals and such great artists that they did change the language of the music. They were very cognizant of everything that came before as well. There's no outsider art in a discipline that's this, I use the word again, stringent.
Although you would want to get musicians of a like mind together. You wouldn't want to have somebody who has a certain very specific vision of what jazz should be and put him with somebody who has a very different version.
Well, yes and no, because great jazz can go way beyond style. Charlie Parker and Louis Armstrong never recorded with each other, but I'm absolutely certain that they could have made great music together. And
Duke Ellington played with John Coltrane, and that turned out to be pretty great.
Certainly, because the reference points, the blues, swing, the harmony, the improvised melody, all of those things are part of a language that is very rich and has so much tradition in it that it goes beyond style. There's a great record of Sonny Rollins, Paul Blay, and Coleman Hawkins playing All the Things You Are. And you have three very varying approaches, but it all works.
My guest is Bill Charlap, and we're talking about how improvisation works in jazz on today's Please Explain. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Jeffrey from the East Village, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. It's been a very long time since I spoke to you.
We missed you, Jeffrey.
I'm still here. But this was such a great coincidence. I turned the radio on today and heard this. As you probably know, I'm a countertenor, and I specialize in Baroque and earlier music.
Do you do improvisation when you're singing?
Yes, it's absolutely required. And even the structure of the Baroque aria, which is ABA form, fast, slow, fast. The first part of the aria, you would sing what the composer wrote with maybe some trills added. And then the slow section, you begin to show your ability as an artist on how to move the passions and create emotion in a slow movement. And then when you return to the A again, which is the same music, you create your version of the composer's work. And it was even considered to be doing the wrong notes if you didn't add your own ornamentation. And the issue of adding cadenzas. Cadenzas should always be extemporized at the moment, not written out, because that shows the creative aspect of the artist. So it's like co-composing.
So why do you think that kind of went out of classical music?
Well, it went out because as the 19th century increased as it got toward the middle of the 19th century, the art of improvisation was lost as the conductor took over as this sort of funnel through which interpretation was made. Because in the Baroque orchestra, at some point there was always improvisation, the continuo player, which means the person who plays the harmony chords from the bass line, would follow these figs. They're called figured bass. And a continuo player would be a completely individualistic on how he would realize the chords. And in vocal music, if you have a really great one, the way the harpsichordist or the lutenist or the harpist would accompany would be to reflect the meaning of the words and increase the drama. And even in orchestral music, the violins were expected to trill before the cadence, and much of it was not written out. So when you get into the 19th century, which is you play what the composer wrote, Baroque music became boring to most people.
Jeffrey, I have to get back to jazz.
Okay. But thank you.
That was really interesting. And it's interesting also that jazz moved in the opposite direction because it starts off with ragtime and pretty much composed things, and then improvisation takes over.
But I do think that the great ragtime players did improvise. And I think that often, though Joplin is such a master of the forms that he wrote and was a very formally profound musician, certainly there were elements of improvisation likely in his own playing.
Shirley from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I've been thinking about vocalists, particularly girl singers, as they used to be called, particularly Ella Fitzgerald. What about her improvisational work with the other musicians?
Well, again, Ella Fitzgerald is one of the focal figures in the history of this music, and she could invent new melodies. That's one of the things that I think I didn't quite get to yet on talking about foolish things, is that the jazz improviser invents a new melody, not just improvises on the original melodies, but invents new melodies on the basic structure. Ella Fitzgerald was incredible at not just scat singing, that is, indeed, improvising on the changes, but she might sing something like On the Sunny Side of the Street. I remember one thing she sang, and I'm not going to sound like Ella Fitzgerald, but she sang, "Can you hear the pitter-patter?" And it's such an incredible thing that she came up with this, but she came up with line after line after line.
But that's because she had such great ears. It's harder to do it when you're singing than when you're playing,
well,
right?
Well, she was also just a virtuoso and a genius.
Now, Bill, we pretty much run out of time, and I wonder if you want to give us an example of that as we go out. I've been talking with Bill Charlap, and we've been talking about jazz improvisation on today's Please Explain. And Bill, I want to thank you so much. This has been extraordinary. It's a special treat to do this, and then to do it with you. Well, that even just made it so much better.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Well, I'll play a little bit of These Foolish Things, and then I'll just start to blow on it, as they say,
okay,
which means improvise on it.
Charlotte.